There is a high tunnel cost share program in Southeast Alaska. This is being coordinated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture Natural Resources Conservation Service. Here to tell us more about that program are, and I hope I pronounce your name correctly, Samia Savell and Will Murray. Can you
hear me? Hi.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning. So, yes, tell us about this program. Actually, maybe first off, explain what a high tunnel is for those not familiar with it.
Right. So, high tunnel is a temporary greenhouse structure. So, greenhouses, people are really familiar with that term. And usually in a greenhouse, you've got a permanent foundation, and maybe you're growing plants in pots or containers or sometimes on tables, that type of thing. A hoop house or a high tunnel is referred to as temporary. They can be, you know, more or less permanent, but they tend to be rooted in the ground or stabilized in the ground, and people are growing crops either in raised beds or directly in the ground. So there's some kind of contact with the soil. So that's the difference between a greenhouse and a high tunnel, or some people call them hoop houses. And they're larger than, you know, a lot of people in Southeast Alaska use low row covers or, you know, a cover over their beds. So when we're talking about a high tunnel, we're talking about something that's typically at least 6 feet tall in the center. It's something that you can walk around in, move around in, but they are really helpful for extending the growing season. For people in Southeast Alaska, they're also helpful for preventing too much precipitation from getting on your crop, which hasn't been too much of an issue this summer, but it can be in some years, as we all know.
Did this cost share program come about just as an encouragement to get more people to grow their own food, or why are these available?
I think that might have been some of the underlying motivation for having this as part of our programs. But when I say our, Will Murray and I are soil conservationists or resource conservationists for an agency in the Department of Agriculture. It's called the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And our mission really is to help people conserve natural resources along with their typical agricultural operations. And so for us to cost share on something like a high tunnel, we have to have a conservation reason to provide funding and assistance for something like that. And really, there are a lot of conservation benefits for having high tunnels. They can help you make watering more efficient. They can reduce the need for nutrient inputs, especially here in Southeast where we have typically high precip. You can really tend to leach the nutrients out of your soil. And so having a covered or controlled environment can make that a lot more efficient and beneficial for your crops as well. And it can reduce the need for pesticide inputs and control some kinds of pests. So there are some conservation benefits, and I think the real benefit that people realize, especially in Alaska, is that it does encourage local food production, and you can have more fresh local produce if you have people growing in a controlled environment like a high tunnel.
Explain how this cost share program works. How much money is available to someone, and how basically overall, just kind of how does this sharing work?
Well, typically we have funding that is allocated for our Environmental Quality Incentives Program. It's called EQIP. That's the acronym. And the funding changes every year. It's allocated for the whole state. And then depending on how many applicants we have and if people are eligible, and depending on a variety of different factors, we can provide that financial assistance for a variety of different conservation practices, we're calling them, including high tunnels, but also we help people with things like nutrient management and irrigation water management and a variety of different practices that can be beneficial not only for growing food or flowers, but also just for conserving natural resources.
I guess, is there a limit? I mean, does someone have to give you a design and then build it first, or do you give them the money, then they build it? Sort of how does that work?
Well, the way that works is first people, there's some paperwork that needs to be filled out, and there's some eligibility income limitations, which aren't really much of a limitation, but the way it works is if someone gets the funding nod, say, from the state office and a contract is written up, the producer, the client, will then purchase a kit. We require that it's a kit that's purchased as opposed to something that's maybe built with backyard parts or something like that. What we're looking for is quality, and it has to be. There's a 5-year practice life, so it needs to be built well. And the customers will, you know, order the kits, build the structure, and as they near completion, notify us. We will come out and certify the practices built according to the specifications, and process a payment, usually within a couple of weeks. So it does require a little bit of upfront funds from the client.
And then normally would you, I just try to understand how much of it gets paid for. Do you potentially pay half of it, a certain amount towards it, or as you're saying, it kind of depends on how many people apply?
Yeah, we have payment rates that change a little bit from year to year, and it really depends on the person's situation. They're based on a per square foot rate, and just as an example, here in Juneau and in Ketchikan, which we would consider one of our urban areas, the payment rate for this year for 2016 was, I believe, $5.62 per square foot for someone who is a regular producer. Now, we have different rates if you're so-called historically underserved, so if you're Alaska Native or Hispanic or have an income that's below our typical income levels for limited resource producers. There are a variety of different ways that we parse out the funding depending on a person's individual situation. And so for a more remote area, if you're, say, a beginning farmer living in Pelican, then the rate goes up to over $7 per square foot. So it's really kind of an individualized situation, how much funding, and we work individually, almost like a consultant, with a person, a landowner or a grower, to really tailor their application to them. So people can call us and say, hey, I'm interested, and we'll talk with them and figure out what really is going to meet their needs and if there are other conservation practices that might be helpful for them.
Okay, so this sounds, though, anyone in Southeast would be eligible to apply for this. It's not just in, say, urban areas. It sounds like it's for anyone.
Yeah, it is. It is for anyone. You do have to be currently growing food or fiber, or flowers, and it does need to be a legal substance on the federal scale of things. So. There's a lot of new changes. I imagine our jobs will change significantly if some things are legalized on the federal level. But for now, we're sticking with food or fiber or flowers. And It is eligible, or people are eligible if their land is eligible. So there are a variety of different things that we would go through. A person or a landowner with ensuring that they're eligible for our program. And then we work with them, like I said, on an individualized basis to sort of tailor what we call a conservation plan for their particular situation. And yeah, we have, let's see, there's over 39 total high tunnels that have been contracted since 2010 through this program. We currently have 14 that are planned or are underway for 2017, for next year. So there's been a fair bit of interest, and particularly in more remote areas. We've had contracts pretty much all over Southeast, anywhere from Haines and Skagway, Gustavus, I mentioned Pelican, all the way down to, you know, Prince of Wales, Wrangell, Tom's Place. I think the impact is perhaps a little bit more almost meaningful in a more remote area where it's tougher to get fresh produce in some place like Western Admiralty Island or Tom's Place.
Okay, so you say someone has to already be growing things. Can this be something a person with a commercial business can apply for, or is it just for private citizens?
No, it's anybody, actually. It can be a commercial enterprise, or it can be an individual backyard farmer.
Okay, and the application, I see applications are due by September 1st. So if people wish to apply, what do they do?
Well, the application deadline for 2017, that's for next fiscal year, is September 1st, but there are some eligibility issues that need to be resolved with applicants, with potential applicants, before that date. So if people are not currently registered with Farm Services Agency, which we don't typically come across too many people who are already registered with the Farm Services Agency, we really recommend that people contact the Juneau field office by July 31st so that we can work with them to make sure that they are eligible when the application deadline appears.
Okay, and we will we post our interviews on our website, krbd.org, and I will have links to this information included with that. We are running out of time. Do you have any last-minute things you'd like to say?
No, I really appreciate you allowing us to speak today, and maybe I'll hand it off to Will. Looks like he's ready to jump in here.
No, I just wanted to say thanks for the opportunity, and hopefully our contact information will be on your site there, I imagine.
Yes, I have that info, and I'll be sure to add that.
All righty. Well, we're looking forward to people calling us and getting started.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Samia Savelle and Will Murray. And again, we will have that information posted later today on our website, so you can find links to the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service office in Juneau.